This week's New Fronts highlighted three key and interlocking themes: TV OEM's emphasis on fasts, AI's role in driving video ads value, and CTV evolving to full funnel. Listen on for more.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Stream. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and that was Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media at the top there. Hey, Colin, how goes it with you?
It goes really well. And how were things in the Big Apple? You were up there for the New Fronts, and how did that go?
Yeah, so in Boston, we say we're down there when we go to New York, not up there when we go to New York.
Of course.
New York. South of us, but that's today's geography lesson. Yeah, things were good. I attended a number of the New Fronts presentations, and I've done that for many years. And it's I think a really great way to kind of take the temperature of the industry and see what key players' priorities are and the vocabulary that they're using to describe opportunities and challenges, and also importantly to connect with industry colleagues, folks who I've known for many, many years, and talk with them off the record about how things are going in the industry and just get a lot of insight. So very valuable. We're going to talk in depth, as you just said a moment ago in the opening, we're going to talk in depth about the New Fronts. But first, we're going to talk about a couple of news items that we saw this week. And I am going to get us started. And I have to say that item that really took me by surprise, not expected at all, was the Wall Street Journal reporting this week that NBC is preparing, again, this is an article, this is not fact, so let's all kind of keep it in check, expectations in check, but NBC preparing a $2.5 billion a year bid for an NBA rights package that they would potentially shift over from TNT. TNT is reportedly currently paying about $1.2 billion per year under its current contract. So this would effectively double what the value of that NBA package is, from $1.2 to $2.5 billion a year. And I have to say, I thought that this, if it happens, kind of flies in the face of a lot of key trends that you and I have been talking about now for ages, and everybody else's as well. And the first, of course, the primary one, is cord cutting. And the Journal's reporting that they would put some of these games on the NBC network. I just don't really understand what the value to NBC of doing that would be long term. I mean, short term, sure, they'll generate some inventory and so forth, but you know, which would be valuable. But strategically investing in NBC at this point, in the midst of cord cutting and all the effort they've put behind Peacock, I don't really get it. Some of the games, to be clear, would be on Peacock. It's not really specified what would go where. But in any event, it struck me as surprising that Comcast/NBC would pay up at that level to get the NBA package. I thought it was much more likely that if a big chunk of the package moved over, it would go to a streaming only or big tech company like Amazon, which certainly has been rumored to be very much in the mix. But how about you? Surprised? Are you surprised, or what do you think?
I am surprised, Will. It does play into the ever escalating cost of sports license fees. My assumption was, when I saw this, was that whatever NBC gets, it will have the right to put them both on broadcast and on Peacock, all of them. I would assume that that was the case. And if that is the case, it would definitely pair, I think, pretty well with the way they seem to be directing Peacock. And that is, Peacock is becoming a really pretty decent sports platform. And perhaps that is where NBC is really directing it now. They're really thinking of Peacock as becoming almost the sort of de facto ESPN online. And it's trying to usurp the role that ESPN has played on traditional cable in the streaming sphere. It certainly has plenty of sports now. A lot of people are going to be watching the Olympics this summer on Peacock. Which actually makes me wonder why they increased the price just before. They're increasing the price of Peacock just before the Olympics. Maybe they think people will pay the extra $2. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, longer conversation, but the idea that NBC would simulcast games on Peacock and on NBC would seem to undermine the idea of Peacock having exclusivity on these games, which in turn would drive subscriptions, like we saw with the NFL playoff game last, you know, a few months ago. So let's put a pin in this one for now, Colin. It was obviously just an article. We'll wait and see if anything comes of it. But it sounds like we both felt that it was kind of a surprising, unexpected move.
Just real quick, Will. That they, if they do this, they'll probably do what they've been doing with the Premier League, which is they'll cherry pick one of the top games and they will broadcast it. That's what they do. And that top game is not available on Peacock. So that's probably what they'll do with the NBA as well.
Cool. Let's move on. News item on your radar this week.
Yeah, this is an announcement but from Allen Media Group and LG Electronics. So Allen Media Group owns a streaming service called Local Now. It's got 220 odd local news, local broadcasters providing local news for this thing called Local Now. Well, the deal they've done with LG is for LG channels. And if you have an LG TV or a TV that's powered by WebOS, and it's probably going to be an LG TV, they are licensing WebOS, but it's probably going to be an LG TV, you will be able to tune to the streaming service 157 channel, and that will be your local news for your location. It will show 24/7 news powered by the local newsrooms of your local affiliates that are partnering with Local Now. And I think this is a brilliant thing for consumers. I really love it. I think it makes it really easy, right? You know that your local news is on 157. So if you want to know what's going on, you just tune there and you're going to get whatever's happening in your local area. The thing I worry a little bit about it for is how actually this helps the local broadcasters. Because if, say, you have three affiliates, an ABC, CBS, and Fox affiliate in one region that works with Local Now, then how on earth do they divvy up the advertising between those three affiliates? Whose news leads in that feed? I don't know. I don't know how this will work out in practice.
Okie doke. Well, let's shift to our main topic this week, which was, as we talked about already, going to be the new fronts, and I'm going to get us started. I'll just say quickly, the Reader's Digest version, three main themes for me. Actually, before I get to the themes, let me just quickly say which ones I attended so it's clear. I went to Google and YouTube, which kicked off Monday, Vizio, T-Mobile, Samsung, Roku, and I also streamed Telly, LG Ads, A&E, Reverie, and also on Monday afternoon, I attended the Spotlight on News program at the New York Times space that IAB put together. There were three sessions there. I'd like to talk a little bit about that later. As a side note, even though it wasn't really video oriented specifically, but in any event, so those were the sessions that I attended. I'm guessing a bunch of our listeners attended some or all of those sessions as well. Three major themes emerged for me, though at very different levels by company presentation. First theme, the role of FAST, particularly for the OEMs. The OEMs are clearly investing in their FAST libraries and their presentation, consumer viewer experience for accessing FAST content. They see it as a differentiator. We'll talk about this a little bit. I don't think either of us is convinced that it actually can be a sustainable differentiator for them, but nonetheless, they're pursuing. Second theme was AI, two of the most popular letters in the English language these days, it seems. I would say that, and again, varied significantly by company. So as an example, Samsung ads put AI front and center in their presentation. They even showed a nifty little robot that they called Bally, doing a bunch of different things in the house, not really TV or streaming centric, but just trying to illustrate what AI can do. Things like audience and data analytics, Google showed how they can easily create new audience targeting personas. AI can advance campaign building, reporting, etc. So AI, I think, is still very much in the first inning, but is going to be, as it's going to be throughout the world, a much bigger force in the years to come. Last big theme was related to full funnel and lower funnel. The these presentations, of course, they're targeted to advertisers and agencies, so there's always an undercurrent of our ads on our platform, our network, our shows, etc., will perform better than elsewhere, than on the competitions. In the past, I think the language has been much more oriented toward how TV advertising is evaluated, so much more about awareness, brand lift, things like that. This year, heard more said about lower funnel KPIs, particular outcomes, than I have in the past. Although, asterisk, I would say that those lower funnel, the kind of interactive or engagement QR code driven campaigns, are still very much in the minority. Though I do think that there is every reason to believe, and I know we're going to talk about this as we get into this, but every reason to believe that the value of an ad unit, however you want to measure that, the value of 15 seconds of a viewer's time, 30 seconds of a viewer's time, a value of their attention, et cetera, however you want to measure it, the value of ad units are only going to get more valuable going forward as a result of more of a full funnel or lower funnel orientation, and also what AI is going to deliver in terms of targeting and campaign building, reporting and analytics. So I am very bullish about the value of advertising going forward, but a lot of real estate to go in terms of how it gets realized. So yeah. Three key themes there.
I'd like to toss one more in for me, Will, and that is that we're seeing a lot of innovation, ad innovation now from the from the TV platforms. So there was elements of that from Roku, from Telly, from Vizio. So we're really beginning to see the CTV platform leverage its abilities to deliver new ad units and new ad value. So that's probably one I would toss in as well.
I think that's right. I think all the platforms have been doing a lot of innovating for a bunch of years now, and they're continuing to do that. They're trying to differentiate from one another how to deliver new value. And again, kind of coming back to the idea of engagement in lower funnel, certainly there were plenty of examples. Vizio showed a number of different engagement opportunities. They have a new show that they're launching with the chef Tom Colicchio called The Pantry, which is very much about interactivity and commerce. It sort of blends into that place that the home shopping networks, I think, have been in for, since the beginning of time, of being able to showcase products and how they get used and try to incent buying. Also saw that from Samsung. They showed how across different fast channels they're creating engagement opportunities. Saw that also very much from Roku. Roku is enhancing the ad that is on their home screen, which many of us are familiar with, that has to date only been a static image. They're now going to be running those as video units as well. So that'll, I think, be very enticing as a tune-in place for any FAST or SVOD provider to be able to do compelling clips in those ads. So lots of different, to your point, lots of different examples of innovation and how the the different OEMs and providers for that matter, not just OEMs, but FAST providers as well, are creating new engagement units for advertisers and viewers.
Yeah, I will also throw in the thing I love about telly is, as our listeners will know, there's this second screen, the long thin screen that's sort of on the bottom of the television, and they can do anything they want on that screen. One of the things that this really pays super dividend on is in interactivity. Well, one of the biggest problems when you're doing interactivity on a single screen is that you have to take up screen real estate to tell somebody that they can interact, and then you're reliant on them pressing a red button or clicking or something to get the bonus information. Well, if you have a second screen that's stuck in front of right underneath the existing screen, you don't need that. And that's one of the advantages. Telly was definitely talking a lot about that, their new front. The fact that you do not need to be queued. You can just put the interactive information right there. And it doesn't interrupt the viewing experience. You lose nothing. So I think this two-screen approach is definitely a lot superior to the single-screen interactivity approach that we've seen in the past.
I think that you and I agreed that we were not going to delve too far into telly on this podcast There's a lot more there.
Big topic.
So we're going to save that for another day. I think you and I are somewhat on opposite sides of how enthusiastic we are about telly. We'll leave it to the listeners to guess who's more enthusiastic, less enthusiastic than the other. You know, the good news, I think, for all of the CTV providers, the OEMs, and anybody streaming to CTVs, is that there's a lot of engagement and interactivity that can happen on the single screen. To be sure, the more screens, the more screen real estate there is, et cetera, more opportunities there are going to be to exist. But it's not like a black and white, all or nothing kind of situation. So, and the other thing I think, and this is, I think, you know, also very relevant to the idea of how ad units increase in value to both advertisers and content providers in the future, which is the role of the mobile device. And there are a lot of people, and I am kind of in this camp as well, believe that the mobile device is really more going to be the province of interactivity than the TV itself. And currently the bridge between those two environments is really the QR code, which got even though it's been around for 20 years or whatever, it got a huge kick during COVID because people got accustomed to using QR codes for restaurant menus, etc. So I see a lot of, and saw this at the New Fronts, I saw the QR code as being kind of, you know, for better or for worse, because it's not perfect, obviously, but being a focal point in terms of engagement on CTVs.
Yeah, that was definitely the focus of a lot of the advertising discussion that I saw, Will. And I think for me, QR codes are really an interesting animal, because I got to believe that the response rates on those are pretty low. Because I don't know about you, but I have used a QR code on the TV, but not very often, and they appear all the time. I just don't use them very much. So I think the response time is actually really pretty poor on those. But the great thing about them, of course, is that you can put that QR code in and you completely own the interaction. So that has nothing to do with the TV platform. The interaction comes directly to you. If you're selling a coupon or even selling an item, it's all down to you. So it's something that you can completely control. So I totally understand why it's grown so popular, even though probably response rates aren't that great. But that was definitely a focus. I saw that in a lot of the demonstrations at the New Fronts.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Colin. The idea that the advertiser owns that customer relationship once the viewer has scanned the code and goes into their environment. That, I think that's a huge advantage, because as we know, the balance of value across the media ecosystem has shifted so dramatically toward platforms in the past 20 years that, you know, you look at the valuations of a Google, of a Meta, of a, you know, of an Amazon, et cetera. And that's what is so worrisome to other parts of the ecosystem, is that so much of the value has been transferred to them. So to your point, the idea that a viewer would scan a code and then be in a, you know, an owned environment, if you will, is significant. It's real. And I would say just maybe one other quick thing about QR codes. And I've scanned QR codes and gone into those environments as well. I think that there's a lot of work yet to be done to figure out how to optimize the QR initiated experience. It's still, I think, relatively primitive. And I don't think there's really been a, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, like a defining campaign in the QR world that consumers, that generate the kind of, generates the kind of consumer buzz that then, you know, impels other advertisers to do that as well, and consumers to get really excited about it. So I think it comes at some point, but we're not there yet.
So I wanted to sort of loop back on a couple of things. And the first thing I wanted you to speak a little bit more about AI. What you saw, I think it was from LG, that they're doing with AI, it might have been Samsung, because I think it feeds directly into your third point about lower funnel. Talk to us a little bit more about what they were talking about doing with AI.
Yeah, so Samsung, again, Samsung really led with AI right from the get-go. And they even, you know, went to the extent of showing a video of this, what they call the Bally robot, who can be remotely controlled via an app and can be your dog's best friend while you're out at work and feed the dog and, you know, help you basically do whatever. It was a little, there was talk afterward, is Bally even real or was it just like a proof of concept sort of thing by Samsung just to show things off? And I'm actually still not sure, to tell you the truth. But yeah, I think Samsung emphasize AI. First, they were talking about AI, how it helps picture and audio quality, which I thought was maybe interesting, but not really kind of where the main action is in AI. They talked about it helping in game mode. You know, it's Samsung, so they have other big businesses, obviously. They have big businesses in mobile and in consumer electronics and so forth. So they see AI more holistically as being able to add value across product lines. It just as a quick contrast to that, Google, at the Google New Front, they talked about AI throughout, but then their last presenter was a gentleman named Bill Reardon, who's the GM of enterprise platform Google Ads. He's a technical guy, and he actually got relatively into the weeds about how Google is currently implementing AI and sort of a taste of what is to come. And I'm sure not do full justice to what he said, but I'm just going to try to paraphrase a little bit. He showed screens in the campaign manager of how AI would essentially allow a, you know, an advertiser, an agency, or someone, you know, doing a campaign, setting up a campaign and optimizing going forward, how AI is allowing Google and YouTube to essentially sift through viewer behavior and data associated with it at a level that has never been possible before. And as a result of that sifting process, uncover and create these so-called audience personas of people who should be targeted that may not have been, you know, kind of obvious or readily available in the past. And I thought it was a really good taste of how AI, with all of its kind of analytical horsepower, is able to reveal these insights, which again, in turn, create more value and higher ROI in the advertising itself. So I'm not an AI expert myself. I'm learning about it along with most of us at this point. And I was very interested in going to the NewFront presentations to see how AI was being framed by presenters and whether the opportunity is here currently or is still futuristic. And I came away feeling like it's already here, but still early days.
Yeah, and that was what got me really interested, Will, because your point about lower funnel, I am, as I think you are, we're both very bullish on lower funnel and how spending is going to shift toward lower funnel going forward. And I think this ability of AI to sift through data and really identify quite unique groupings of individuals that can be targeted in new ways, I think that's going to aid in the shift to lower funnel advertising. And I think 5 years from now, it's going to be a lot of advertising budget is going to be going in that direction. And that's the exciting thing. That's, I think, the thing that we've always been excited about, CTV over traditional TV. The advertisers simply couldn't do this before. Now they can, and it is opening the floodgates. And I think AI is going to help with the targeting and do that so often in real time. That's a very, very powerful tool to bring to bear that will just accelerate the move towards lower funnel spending.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that was a nice way of framing things, Colin. And, you know, maybe just not to state the obvious, but to add to what you said, the degree of personalization of ads is as a result of AI and the data sets that it's pulling and the creative optimization. The personalization of ads that we're going to see 5 years from today versus now is, I think, going to be night and day. You know, as much as there's this imperative for reach and launching, you know, new products and so forth, at the end of the day, as spending shifts toward more lower funnel or even full funnel performance oriented campaigns, personalization is the name of the game. And, you know, Colin Dixon getting an ad that is, you know, not to be freakishly big brother here, but it's like literally based on what you might have just done an hour ago, you know, when you did a search or walk your dog or whatever. Like, it's pretty mind-boggling how personalized those ads are going to become, and how valuable in turn they're going to be to advertisers and publishers for that matter.
So what jumped into my mind was that scene in Minority Report when Tom Cruise walks past the ad of the woman and it starts talking directly to him with his name. Oh, right. My God, it sounds like that's just around the corner.
I think that's a good bet. And it's a little freakish. And I have to say that T-Mobile, which was doing its first new front this year, and I thought they did a great job, but they were all about the data and their ability to have some, you know, degree of proprietary data as a result of them being a big mobile provider, which I think is another topic. I'm not 100% sure I understand that either, but in any event, you know, hard to not come away from that presentation and others for that matter, not feeling a little like we're entering a world where, you know, privacy and Big Brother and everything else is going to start, is going to get only more attention going forward, makes sense. But let's go back to just one other quick topic, if we could, Colin, because I know this is near and dear to your heart also, which is, I mentioned one of the main themes was the prevalence of FAS by OEMs. And would like to talk to you about that a little bit as well. As we were preparing for the podcast, we were kind of chewing through this idea of how the OEMs are all obviously going after FAS hard, but neither of us are still quite sold on understanding how FAS are going to be a differentiator one versus the next, since the bulk of the content is not original or exclusive to an OEM, but rather freely available and distributed as widely as possible.
I completely agree, Will. When I look at FAST services, there are a lot of channels that are common between them. There are also a lot of genre channels that are common between them. And the idea that a consumer is going to select one TV over another based on the selection of channels in their FAST service is frankly ridiculous. They're not going to do that. And so for that reason, I really do not see how people are going to be able to differentiate via their FAST services. A great example is Roku has invested in, they're doing an American Bake Off show, like the Great British Bake Off show. And That it's a good show. It's quality. It's enjoyable. My wife and I both watch it. That will not influence me one iota in purchasing a television. And I really don't see how a TV OEM can build a sustainable position that would get people to buy their TV in preference to another cheaper TV with virtually the same functionality and picture quality. I just don't see it. I just don't see it happening. There is an opportunity, I think, for in the short run for TV OEMs to build value. So one of the things that they are doing is that they're now building genre channels. And they just license, so you know, there's a crime channel. Many of them have a crime channel and a reality channel, and they're just licensing content into those channels. That's fun for consumers. They'll know that they're there. They can tune into them when they fancy watching a Western or a crime show or something, and just let them play. But all TVs will have these. There'll be different flavors on each, and it won't really matter what the flavors are because they're just pandering to that sort of general, I just fancy watching a mystery type feeling. So again, I just don't see that as an opportunity to create sustainable differentiation going forward. I don't know what this means for the built-in FAST services in the TVs, but I just don't see it building a sustainable position.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, the sustainability and what is differentiation in this category. The types of zones, if you will, that you just mentioned, in other words, curation of certain types of content into places that viewers can then quickly access, that all seems to me to be more of a like a curation or UX kind of angle, if you will. It's not really a content angle. And you know, the unfortunate thing with UX and you know, curation is it can be so easily copied. So there's, you know, if it looks like it's working on one platform well, then it can be recreated somewhere else also. So I don't know if that really works either. I think from a consumer standpoint, FASTs are great. We've had this conversation a number of times. FASTs are great. You know, who doesn't like free content and you know, well-organized free content? So all that is great. I just don't yet fully understand what the long-term play is for the OEMs in this space. And that I think feeds into the broader question of how the FAST market itself is going to evolve in the future, which we don't have time today to crack that nut, but is certainly a topic for a future conversation.
Yeah, you bet. But so, I think Will, we should probably wrap it up. I think we've gone on for long enough this time. Plenty of things for us to return to in the future though.
I think we should, as I mentioned earlier, I just want to spend, if I may, a minute on one last thing that happened at the New Friends this week, which I thought was really, spoke very highly of IAB, which of course organized the New Friends Week, which was the hour and a half that they dedicated on Monday afternoon to what they called Spotlight on News. And it was three sessions within the hour and a half, three panels of mostly C-level executives, all talking about essentially trying to debunk the myth that advertisers should stay away from news-oriented content. And we know that news today is often very difficult to digest and difficult to grapple with. It's a problematic world that we live in. But there's been a myth that's grown up that advertisers don't want to spend their money, shouldn't spend their money, that it's you know, not brand safe or brand suitable. The instruments that have been used to filter out news content from advertisers' campaigns is sort of a blunt instrument of keyword blocking tools. And IAB presented research that shows that viewers really don't view an advertiser or brand any worse, in fact, maybe even better, if they see those ads adjacent to challenging hard news. And IAB, I think, was really doing the industry, and even more broadly speaking, without sounding too highfalutin, I think doing democracy a good service by dedicating that hour and a half to showing how vital news is to a democracy, and in turn, how supporting news is not just good societal thing for advertisers to do, but it's good business. It's a good business decision as well. So
yeah,
I just wanted to give a shout out to IAB, to David Cohen and his team there, and to all of the presenters. I mean, they had the CEOs of NBC News Group, CNN, New York Times, BBC, NPR. They had the chief revenue officers from Dow Jones, from Condé Nast, from the New York Times, senior agency and brand leaders from GM and agencies and so forth. It was something that, you know, clearly meant a lot to IAB and meant a lot to everybody who was there. And I hope that we'll see more of that from IAB and from others in the future. So yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to give them recognition that I thought was well-deserved.
Yeah. Well said. And I just want to say, really enjoyed Cab Reverie, which was Cab Reverie. Damien Petticioni is the MC from Cabaret doing the Reverie performance. And I really felt bad for Blake Sabatelli, who is the CEO of Atmosphere TV, who came right after them. Though he did a great job. I thought he really articulated the value proposition of Atmosphere TV really, really well. And I just say, you can find interviews with Blake and with Damien on End Screen Media. If you'd like, you can come and grab the End Screen Noise podcast, and you'll find interviews by both of those CEOs that right there. Great, and the presentations I saw were really good, so very enjoyable. Anyway, that's Absolutely. It for this week, I think.
That is it for this week, Colin. Great talking to you about all this stuff. And listeners, thanks for listening in. And as always, Colin and I are available for any follow-up. Just get in touch with us. That's it. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you all again next week.
Inside the Stream is a production of InScreen Media and Video News, all rights reserved.